Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we get started, I want to remind you, when you are planning travel, remember the name JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate. And if you check there first and find a great deal, either by naming your own price or choosing from all their great published specials, a portion of your purchase goes to help support the show at no additional cost to you. So remember, when planning your travel, go to JohnnyDollarAir.com first. Now it's time for today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. It's time for The Valentine Matter, Part 3 and Part 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Ann Ward. Mrs. Valentine. Have you heard anything about Dan?
Nothing, Mrs. Valentine. The police are looking everywhere for him.
I went to the hospital tonight and they told me he walked out. He might die, Mr. Dollar.
I know, Mrs. Valentine.
Did you tell anyone I was here in New Orleans?
If you mean did I mention it to the police, no.
Thank you, Mr. Dollar. That was very kind of you.
But it makes me mad that I didn't, Mrs. Valentine. I know you don't want anybody to find you're related to him because of your daughter. But I also think you could help the police in this situation. You could help them find Dan and put him back in a hospital.
Mr. Dollar, would you come over and talk to me, please? Please.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Some more expense. I believe this is item 5. Yeah, $4. 4 drinks for myself. When a next big shot of the Roaring Twenties like Dan Valentine carries a $50,000 life insurance policy and walks down the street one day and gets himself shot and refuses to disclose who fired the bullets, I have to do the worrying for the insurance company. When he decides to leave a hospital bed minus a pint or two of blood, I have to worry some more. I needed those drinks. You can just say I liked what I'd seen of the guy, and I didn't want him to walk around New Orleans bleeding to death.
In here, please, Mr. Dollar.
The wife, who hadn't seen or heard from him for 13 years, looked pale and wan. It was obvious that the strain was beginning to tell on her, although she tried hard not to show it.
Doesn't it ever cool off in New Orleans?
Sometimes. But I'm not here to talk about the weather, Mrs. Valentine. You know that.
Yes, I know.
Well, don't just stand there and give me the tears, then. If you've got anything to say, say it. If you know anything that'll help, let me know about it.
You're perfectly right in being angry with me. Mr. Dollar, I honestly don't know where Dan is.
Well, do you know why he'd get up out of a hospital bed and endanger his life?
I have an idea he might have wanted to see somebody.
Who?
I don't know.
The two men who shot at him?
Perhaps. I just don't know.
We aren't getting anywhere, Mrs. Valentine. Look, I'm going to talk to you frankly. Why did he come here to live in New Orleans?
Well,
You live in New England with your daughter, Teresa. Obviously, Dan thinks a great deal of you and her. He's given you everything, provided for you, with all of his troubles. Spent 13 years in prison. I can imagine his thoughts about you and her while he was in there. And yet he comes out and lives 2,000 miles away from you.
He didn't want to interfere with Teresa in any way.
Sure. But it seems to me he'd want to look at you, at her, certainly. Even if it was a matter of living in Boston and taking a bus to New Salem and standing on a street corner one day to watch the two of you cross the street. That sound reasonable to you?
If you put it that way.
Well, look, there's some reason he picked New Orleans. Some reason he didn't give himself the little gratification of just looking at you and Teresa. Why? Why here?
I'm sure I don't know.
And why is he running around now?
I can't answer that either.
But it must have something to do with you and your daughter. Obviously, you're the only ones he ever cared about. Well?
I honestly don't know.
Well, and I can't help you, and I can't help myself or him.
You mentioned his having a reason to be in New Orleans. Maybe...
What?
There was a man named Webster, Conrad Webster. He was a member of the Illinois Bar once in those days. Did a great deal of work for Dan and friends of Dan. I think he lived here.
Wait a minute, I've seen that name... Yeah, on copies of the insurance policy. A man named Webster had the power of attorney. He bought the insurance. There's a trust in there for your daughter.
Yes, Conrad Webster was an old friend of Dan's. I don't even know whether he's alive now or not. He drank a great deal later on. I think he lived here.
Was he the kind of friend Dan would go to if he needed help?
Yes, I think so.
All right.
What are you going to do?
It's just something to look into. I'll try and find Webster, and maybe I can find your husband.
Thank you for coming by. I needed somebody to talk to. What?
I hope he stays alive, Mrs. Valentine. Item 7, $16, the money it cost me to find out the location of Conrad Webster. I started at his last known address, followed a series of bars, and finally got information from a bartender that led me to the crummier half of a decaying duplex on Gentilly Street. Everything was quiet for Gentilly Street.
Young man, the drugstore delivers what I need most. The telegraph office, what I dread most. Obviously, you represent neither, and therefore you are no concern of mine.
Wait a minute. Are you Mr. Webster? Conrad Webster?
I am he, and I am drunk and disheveled, and it is 3 o'clock in the morning.
I'd like to talk with you. May I come in?
You may not.
This isn't exactly the hour for making calls, but I did stop by and pick up something to take the edge off.
Ted? Huh?
It's bonded.
Oh, inside, inside. Now then, you were going to apologize.
Here you are, Mr. Webster.
Oh, well. Now then, as long as this lasts, you will last.
All right. I'm looking for a man.
The entire world is looking for a man. Just one man. A man they blindly presume will break off these shackles that bind us and lead us forth into eternal justice.
Yeah, sure, but that's not why.
An ironic anticipation.
I'm talking about Dan Valentine.
You are?
Yes, I'm a friend of his.
No. No, you don't come from that place. The pallet is not with you. You lie.
I didn't say I was in jail with him.
Then where else would he have made friends these long years?
He's out of prison now. He's been out for 3 months.
And I'm aware of that.
Did you know he was shot at yesterday? 3 hours ago, he left his hospital bed. I thought he might have come to you. Is he here?
He is not.
Do you know where he is?
I do not.
Mr. Webster, if Valentine isn't back in the hospital pretty soon, he'll die.
Why is the phenomenon of death so persistently alarming? So he will die. They all die. Usually from a bullet.
And that's what's going to happen to him. 2 bullets he stopped yesterday. Do you understand me?
Acutely, acutely. You've impressed me with the urgency of his situation. But Dan Valentine is not here, nor has he been here, nor has he contacted me, nor do I know where to contact him.
All right, Mr. Webster, all right. I guess I believe you.
Your concern for him is a distressing irritation. What is the reason for it?
I'm an insurance investigator, and it's my job to keep him alive. More than that, I like him. I told you I was his friend. I think he deserves to live.
You, his friend? No. You are too young to be his friend. His friends, for the most part, are gone. Like the long years. Like Homburg hats and the Charleston and Lime Ricky. The The ones who are left are broken and tired and faded, with old faces, faces like mine, like his. And we should be gone too. Another age is here. This is my sadness. As for yours, Dan Valentine should never have lived in that age or this age. He was meant to be an explorer, a pioneer who conquered a wilderness, not a racketeer who conquered a west side.
Are you sure you're his friend, Mr. Webster?
I once thought so. He once thought so. Now, I haven't strength enough to be anyone's friend. What's your name?
Johnny Dollar.
Good night, Mr. Dollar.
The look in Conrad Webster's eyes held the same sort of sadness I had seen in Valentine's eyes. But they were different, too. They held a weakness. The strong, sad eyes were somewhere else in the city, walking alone, probably looking for two gunmen, and the lifeblood was slowly draining from the body that sparked them. I went back to my hotel and tried to sleep, but sleep wouldn't come. I was still rolling and tossing at 7:30 the next morning when orange juice coffee in the morning paper came up. A nationwide syndicate had picked up the new development in the Valentine shooting and gone to work on it. Among other names they mentioned in giving a resume of Valentine's career were his wife and daughter, living in New Salem under the name of Ward.
Hello?
This is Johnny Dollar. I just read the morning paper, Mrs. Valentine.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry it broke for you this way.
That's very kind of you to say so. Maybe it's for the better, anyhow. For years I've been wanting to tell Teresa who her father is, what he's like. I'm going to call her later today. Tell her where I am, explain why I'm here. I think she can take it.
You're doing pretty well yourself.
Thanks again. Any word yet?
No. No, we still can't find him.
Mr. Webster, did you find him?
Yes, he wasn't much help.
The New England paper said that Mrs. Ward was out of town. Sooner or later they'll find out what town Mrs. Ward is in, I'm afraid.
Well, maybe you'd better get another hotel, use another name.
Yes.
All right, I'll wait to hear from you.
Mr. Dollar.
Yes?
Thank you.
I put in another call to Inspector DeBaca and asked him about developments. Valentine was still unlocated. They were covering drugstores and doctor's offices where he might seek assistance. The two unidentified men who had shot him were still unidentified. The police weren't able to dig up any more witnesses or get any line on the car. By 4 in the afternoon, Mrs. Valentine had still not called me to report a new address. I got worried and went over to the Roosevelt to see what was what. I was surprised to see Inspector DeBaca in the lobby talking to the bell captain.
All right, son. If you remember anything else, call me here.
Yes, sir. I sure will.
Hi.
Hi, Dollar. Well, you want to talk first or you want me to? All right, I'll talk first. Mrs. Valentine's been staying here under the name of Ann Ward. You knew that.
Yeah.
Why didn't you say anything to me?
She asked me not to.
Doesn't make any difference now, anyhow. That boy over there called us a little while ago. He said that Dan Valentine came in here this afternoon, went upstairs, came back down 15 minutes later with Mrs. Valentine. They both left together.
Yeah, he must have seen the story in this morning's paper and guessed she was in town.
That's the way I see it. Well, we're right back where we started from, and I'm about sick of it.
We're a little better off. Two people are easier to find than one. We found them, all right, at 7 o'clock that night. And it was easy. Three squad cars were already drawn up in front of the little hotel. And I noticed with a sinking heart that a hearse was there also. Dan Valentine and his wife were dead. Johnny Dollar.
What is all this, Johnny?
Who's this?
Roy Vickers, New Britain Mutual. What happened to Valentine?
He was gunned down last night going into a hotel with his wife.
No.
The police here are turning the city upside down trying to get a line on two unidentified gunmen.
Well, couldn't you keep him alive?
I couldn't even find him.
Well, this is no time to be yelling at each other. I just left his daughter.
Huh? She filed claim already? Through that lawyer Webster?
No. She didn't even know anything about him until the papers broke the story. Well, I'm sorry I got annoyed for a second. Do what you can, Johnny. They'll want a full report.
Sure, Roy, sure. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is a further accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Item 9, $7 for dinner. I had it with Inspector Charles DeBaca, New Orleans Police. He was a haggard, tired-looking man about that time. All of us were.
You want some more coffee?
No, no thanks.
Two men, both about 6 feet, wearing dark suits and hats, medium to slight builds, one possibly 35, the other possibly 40.
Well, that about ties up with the description of the two men who plugged Valentine earlier and earned him a place in the hospital.
Yeah. We got more of a chance this time, though. There'll be some other witnesses. Somebody has to tell us what kind of a car they had and what direction they went.
One thing, they weren't using silencers anymore.
No, but they did a professional job. I think Valentine knew him, climbed out of that hospital bed to go out looking for him.
Sounds reasonable. How do you figure the rest of it, Inspector?
Well, Valentine saw the newspaper story and knew his wife was in town. He went over, got her, and I take it they were going to check into a new hotel when their friend showed up.
She just happened to get in the way, huh?
Sure. Why'd anybody want to shoot her?
Why would anybody want to shoot him?
Well, because no matter what he was now or how he was playing it, he still lived pretty hard way back then. A man who's lived the kind of life he has and done the things he has is bound to make a few enemies to remember.
No, I think it has something to do with his family. I agree with you that Valentine probably made enemies all over. But he wasn't the kind of man to get excited about any of those kind of people. He pretty well knew how to take care of himself and handle trouble. That's why he was out looking for them.
You sound pretty certain.
It seems to me that if Valentine had been expecting trouble from some of the old-timers, he'd have carried a gun.
You got a point. But then again, he was pretty gentled up. You know how he spent most of his time? Painting.
Huh?
And that house he bought out in Jefferson Parish is covered with pictures he's done since he's been out. Oils. Pretty good, too. When he wasn't painting it, he was listening to music.
Huh. You'd hardly think of Danny Valentine taking up the arts.
Hardly ever. Well, I've got to make a call and get busy.
Yeah. Inspector.
Yeah?
Any objection to me going out and looking around that house?
It's your privilege. Personally, I'm going to look around town for a couple of gunmen.
Anyone out there now?
His cook. Name's Yachino. Nice woman.
Okay, I'll keep in touch with you, Inspector.
Do that. Dollar.
Now what?
You forgot to tell me you looked up the old family lawyer, Conrad Webster, the other night.
Oh, I was trying to find Valentine, the same as you.
Well, if you happen to run into Webster again, you tell him to drop in and see me.
Huh?
He's missing.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I left him standing there and went back to my hotel and shaved, changed clothes, and tried to go over the whole thing in my mind. I did phone into the police station and find out that the slugs that had killed Valentine and his wife were from an Italian-make pistol, a rum barrel, 37.5 caliber, so far untraced. Expense account item 10, cost of cab, from my hotel to Danny Valentine's house in Jefferson Parish.
Yes, sir.
How do you do? Are you Mrs. Iacino?
Yes, sir. Who are you, please?
My name is Johnny Dollar, Mrs. Iacino. I'm from New Britain Mutual Insurance Company. I'd like to talk to you, if I may.
About Mr. Valentine?
Yes.
Not right now, Mr. Dollar. Some other time, huh?
Well, if you prefer it that way, Mrs. Iacino, but...
It's been a hard day here. I mean, Mr. Valentine's death and his wife being killed with him. All of these policemen in and out of here, and now Miss Ward and all.
Miss Ward? His daughter?
Yes, she's here. Arrived 2 hours ago. She's... Stay here.
Could I see her?
You come tomorrow, Mr. Dollar, please. Tomorrow.
Mrs. Iacino.
Yes, Miss Ward.
Who is it?
Mr. Dollar. He's from the insurance company.
Insurance company?
Yes.
I'd like to talk to Mrs. Iacino.
Teresa Ward stood at the base of the iron grill stairway, tall and dark-eyed. And I saw that, like her mother, she had a quiet intensity about her face that made it beautiful. At the same time, ageless. She smiled politely at me. I could only stand there without speaking for a long moment, looking at her. Then Mrs. Iacino excused herself and we were alone.
I wanted to talk to someone who might be able to give me a little more information about all this. It's all quite new to me.
I'll tell you what I can, Miss Ward.
My name is Valentine, isn't it? really Valentine?
Yes, it is.
Well, suppose we correct that mistake right now.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with Valentine.
From what a Mr. Vickers from the insurance office in Hartford told me, I'm to be quite well off because of this man that was murdered.
You mean Dan Valentine?
Yes, Dan Valentine. They tell me he was my father.
Who told you?
Oh, reporters at home and your insurance company. Mother told me my name was Ward. Poor thing. Must have been difficult for her over the years, keeping the secret from me.
Yes, she told me she thought it was the best thing. She, well, the same as he did.
Tell me about my father. Was he a bad man?
Oh, as good or as bad as the Volstead Act made people. I only met him a couple of times.
To awaken one morning and discover that you're the only daughter of a famous racketeer who's been murdered.
Look, Miss Ward, if he had anything to do with the way you turned out, with what you seem to possess within yourself, I'd say offhand that whatever he was or did, he thought of you.
Are you flattering me?
I'm not trying to. You seem like a very nice person.
And so do you, Mr. Dollar. Will you tell me all about this, please?
Well, let's see. You're 21, isn't that right?
Yes.
Just about 15 years ago or so, your father was on trial for income tax evasion. Just before he was convicted, he set up a trust fund with my insurance company to provide for you. It's been paying money for your support and education ever since. According to the terms of the trust, all of the money becomes yours now that your mother and father are dead. It comes to well over $50,000.
That's all there is to it?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I'm grateful to him. I suppose I should be grateful. I can't say that I'm particularly sorry about his death any more than I would be if any other human being died violently somewhere. But about Mother's death, I miss her very much already, Mr. Dollar.
She was holding up pretty well until that point. Then she let go. I held her in my arms and I talked to her. I told her what I knew of her father's life and death. She told me how she'd been reared so far removed from anything that might have connected her in the least way with the Valentine name. Altogether, it was a revealing conversation for both of us. Mrs. Iacino brought us some food and wine.
How long will you be in New Orleans?
Until all of this is straightened out.
You mean until they find out who killed my mother and father?
Yes. How about you?
Oh, I really don't know. After the funerals, I suppose I'll go back. But I wanted to see him, to see what he looked like, what kind of life he led. He was just an ordinary man, wasn't he? You seen these pictures before?
No, this is my first time in the house. Look like Italian landscapes to me. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Must have been something he had with Mother.
Hmm?
She was from Italy.
May I ask you something?
Yes.
How do you feel about him now?
Is this for your report?
For myself.
Well, since you've been here, these last 2 hours, I've begun to think of him for what he was. My father, I mean. I'd like to know why he was killed and who did it. Will I see you again?
I hope so. Terry.
Yes?
I hope so very much.
So do I, Johnny.
I left her at the door that night with a warm sensation inside of me. Something I certainly hadn't expected in the business at hand. The next morning, I was back at the house talking to Mrs. Iacino. She gave me all the information she could remember about Valentine's activities. All of it accurate, but lacking in any possible clue as to the identity of the two men who had killed him and his wife. I had breakfast with Terry there and helped her with funeral arrangements. Then I spent a solid 12 hours with Inspector DeBaca, who had still not located or identified the two mysterious men. However, there were other developments.
This may be something, Johnny.
Oh?
Conrad Webster's been found.
Huh?
Out by Lake Punched Train. Just identified him. He was shot to death with a .37.5.
Italian gun?
Yep. Just like the one that killed Dan Valentine and his wife.
It later developed that the slugs taken from Webster's body, when compared with those that had killed the Valentines, were fired from the same weapon. The case took on proportions. Every available bit of information regarding the two ex-big shots of the 20s was located, read, and reread. It meant activity in cities like St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, and New York. But no new information as to the identity of the killers. I went back to the house.
Johnny.
Here. What is this? You're shaking.
Hold me, please.
Sure.
I suppose I'm being a terrible fool about it all, Johnny, but they've been after me all day. Cheap little things. Newspaper syndicate wants me to write my exclusive story as the shadow daughter of Dan Valentine. Fairy princess of a racketeer.
Take it easy.
Even Hollywood called a producer. Oh, Johnny, I shouldn't have come here at all.
Then what would I have done, Terry?
What would I have done? Make yourself a drink, Johnny. I'll go put on a new face.
It had become apparent to me in the short time I'd known her that she'd grown to love the memory of her father. Also, that the pressure of all that had happened was beginning to take its toll on her. We were walking down the gravel path away from the house. She was quieted down. I suppose I was thinking how nice it would be to kiss her. I twisted, trying for the gun inside my pocket, but there was nobody to shoot at. The two men who had fired the guns were already out of sight. I was alone with Terry Valentine, who was hanging on the gate. I caught her before she fell.
Why me? Why me, Johnny? Why?
She was dead before I could answer.
Will be the final intriguing episode in our story of the Valentine matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, a sober lesson in how long, how far, and how deadly one man's hate can be. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for another exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, let me say this. Betty Lou Gerson as the daughter in this performance may be one of the best supporting radio performances we hear on these Johnny Dollar serials. Because basically she comes into this program after three parts have passed. And comes in part four, is only there for that fourth part. But in that part, she really, just steals the show. Just a great performance in terms of capturing the emotion and kind of the tragedy of this character. I thought it was just incredible. Just an absolutely solid performance. Setting up the climax of the case on Friday. So be sure and listen to us then. for the conclusion of this wonderful case. All right, well, we turn now to our stats. I promised to talk to you a little bit about who in the world and who in the United States is listening. It won't surprise most listeners to find that our audience is about 80% and 8% from Canada. So that right there makes up about 90% of our audience. And the rest of the audience, a total downloads last month, unique downloads were 401,655 during the month of March. And people from 132 countries tuned in to one episode or another, rounding out the top countries. We had the UK, Germany, Australia, the Russian Federation, China, France, Japan, and Mexico, number 10. So a very wide audience in the world. And in terms of what state has our most listeners, in one way it's not a surprise. California is the top, but that's kind of to be expected because California is the largest state in the United States. Number two is a bit of a surprise. Our second highest number of listeners, Virginia, 30,000 downloads in Virginia. And then after that, Texas and New York close behind, Washington State also on the list. And really most of our downloads spread pretty well throughout the country. There were very few states I found where we didn't have at least 1,000 total downloads. Hawaii just missed it at 955. Vermont, I think is the state I'm least popular in. 213 downloads. South Dakota, 811. North Dakota, 759. And Wyoming, 545. But most other states, at least 1,000 downloads or more. Oh, and Mississippi, 839. So if you have friends in those states or friends anywhere, let them know about the show. And I'll talk a little bit about platforms. What are people using as they listen to the program tomorrow? Now we do have a listener comment, a review of our Apple app. Great app, and the sound quality is excellent. Keep them coming. Well, thanks so much. We intend to do that. All right, well, join us tomorrow for Sherlock Holmes. Friday, we will wrap up Call for a Columnist, and we'll also conclude The Valentine Manor. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.